Hello, judges. Counsel for Strickland still has not been reached. We've attempted to contact them to no avail.
Okay, and have we tried to reach someone from counsel? I guess it's Mr. Padway's office.
Yes, we've attempted to contact their office, call his personal cell phone, and text his personal cell phone.
Okay, thank you. I think unless Judge McGee or Chief Judge Cole have a different proposed solution, it seems to me that we could either submit this case on the briefs or what I think is more appropriate, if the AT&T pension benefit plan counsel is here, to let them argue, and then we'll decide if we get a later request for a supplemental response, we'll deal with that. Okay, so why don't we proceed with the Strickland case?
Thank you. I agree with that, Judge Gould.
And so do I.
Okay, so could the clerk of the court please note for the record that the panel is proceeding to the Strickland versus AT&T pension benefit plan case number 18-15336, and that appellant's counsel is not here despite the notices given, and we've been unable to reach counsel or some other representative, and so therefore the court will proceed to hear from appellee. And for appellee, we have Susan Pangborn.
Your Honor.
If I'm pronouncing that correctly.
You are.
Susan Pangborn should proceed with her argument. And I'll just also add that if we later receive some pleading from Mr. Padway asking us to consider a brief or something, we'll deal with that then.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Susan Pangborn. I am representing AT&T Pension Plan. And the issue in this case is whether the district court properly determined that the AT&T plan administrator did not abuse its discretion when it found that Mr. Strickland was no longer totally disabled within the meaning of the pension plan. It's well settled based on the Supreme Court's decision in Firestone versus Bruce that when a plan delegates to a plan administrator complete discretion to make claims determinations and interpret the terms of the plan, the review of the plan administrator's decisions is an abuse of discretion. And under the abuse of discretion standard, any reasonable basis that supports an administrator's decision means there is no abuse of discretion. And here, there certainly was a reasonable basis for how the plan administrator acted. One of the issues that Mr. Strickland raised in his brief was whether there was a conflict of interest. And he conceded that there was no structural conflict of interest, which occurs when the funding of the plan and the plan administrator are the same entities. Here, the plan administrator was Sedgwick, under the name of IDSC. Mr. Strickland also raised the issue of whether he should have been able to have discovery to see if he could come up with some evidence of a conflict of interest. And basically what he was requesting was a fishing expedition, and that is improper. And in fact, if you look at the administrative record here, it's very clear that there was no bias. Mr. Strickland had previously been awarded short-term disability benefits and long-term disability benefits under a different AT&T plan. When he was no longer qualified for those long-term disability benefits, he elected to take benefits under the pension plan. So under the pension plan, if he meets certain requirements, including showing that he is totally disabled as defined by the plan, he's entitled to pension disability benefits. Now, of note, obtaining pension disability benefits is completely separate from pension benefits, which are not affected. So when Mr. Strickland hits the time under the plan at which he qualifies for pension benefits, this denial of pension disability benefits has no effect.
Ms. Pangborn, can I ask you a question?
Yes, Your Honor.
This is Judge Murkia. So when will Mr. Strickland be eligible for regular pension benefits under his plan?
So I believe he could, in fact, take pension benefits now, but because he has not hit the modified rule of 75, those benefits would be lessened. I mean, he could take a smaller benefit amount. I don't recall his exact age and whether, I think within the next few years, I want to say next 3 years or so, to the best of my recollection, he will hit the modified rule to get the full pension benefits.
And another question I had is, because of what happened here and his failure to deliver his documents, his medical records, was this his only opportunity to do so?
Well,
in 6 months or a year, can he make another application of this, or was this it, and it was one shot?
In terms of the pension disability benefits, this was it. Under the terms as the plan has been interpreted by the plan administrator, you have to first qualify for pension disability benefits when you are employed. He's no longer employed, and therefore there's no mechanism for starting the pension disability benefits again. So it would be the same as, for example, if an individual who qualified for an AT&T pension left AT&T, did not yet apply for pension benefits, but during that time period before he was eligible for pension benefits, he became disabled. It's a reasonable, I believe, interpretation of the plan. And because it is reasonable, the plan administrator's determination should be upheld. Here, in terms of how Mr. Strickland was treated, I believe that the administrative record clearly shows that he was told many times he needed to provide the documents. So to the extent that initially he had some confusion about whether he had to get the documents because it was a different procedure than under long-term disability, the record is replete with numerous phone calls, communications to Mr. Strickland telling him it was his obligation to get the records. The administrator sua sponte granted extensions to enable him. So even though the records were first requested and in December, the final decision wasn't rendered until the end of April, 1st of March. And during that time, it granted numerous extensions for him to get the records, and quite simply, he didn't do it.
And did your company have, or I'm sorry, I'm saying your company, did the plan administrator here have access to all of the prior medical records of Mr. Strickland? Because it appears rather well documented that over the previous several years that Mr. Strickland did have a disabling type of condition. And I'm not making any kind of medical assessment. It just seems like he had been eligible for a number of years, and there may have been a likelihood that he is still disabled. And is there any obligation on the plan administrator to review those documents and make those assessments, or is it just because he failed to give the additional or updated medical records, that's enough?
Well, first, he was under two different disability plans, and he, in fact, started pension disability benefits when he no longer met the qualifications for long-term disability benefits. He was told in the very first correspondence to him, telling him that he qualified for pension disability benefits, that it would be reviewed periodically, and that he must stay under the care of a physician. So I'm not a doctor either, and I don't want to guess whether he had some sort of disability, and if we'd had the records and in looking at the other records, it was clear. When I look at the other records, I don't necessarily think it's clear, and I do think it's reasonable for the plan administrator to say, we need you to provide updates. We need to make sure that you remain totally disabled. The plan states that claimants must provide the information that's requested, and Mr. Strickland did not do so. I mean, the plan has an obligation not only to Mr. Strickland, but the plan has an obligation to a fiduciary obligation to others who obtain benefits under the plan. So when it follows its procedure, when it lets him know from the very beginning, this is what we need to ensure that you meet this definition, and he doesn't provide it, medical records from way back, I don't think it's an abuse of discretion for the plan administrator to decide we have to have updated records to review, and gave him every opportunity to provide such records.
Do you know the,
I was just curious. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, please.
I was just curious if I could just add this last question, because under that Montour case, it seems like there is at least a reference or statement that failure to address a contrary decision by the Social Security Administration is not necessarily fatal to a decision denying benefits, and Mr. Strickland makes that argument here when the plan relied on other evidence to reach its conclusion. And I wanted to just ask you, if I could, Ms. Pangborn, is the other evidence that the plan relied on here just the lack of updated information or any other medical explanation or evidence that was in the record?
So, first of all, I would say with regard to Montour, where there was, in fact, a structural conflict of interest, the court did address, and also in that case, the long-term disability benefits being received by the plaintiff in Montour were offset by Social Security benefits. Here, there was a lack of updated information. I mean, in fact, there had not been any information submitted for a year. And again, at the very beginning, he was told that he was going to have to stay under a doctor's care and that there would be periodic checks to ensure. And he was told throughout the process, if you don't provide us with the records, your claim will be denied. And he simply didn't apparently take it. I don't want to say he didn't take it seriously, but he didn't provide the records.
This is probably more of a practical question. It appears that at least part of what happened here is that Mr. Strickland was accustomed from the time he was under the short-term and long-term disability plan benefits that records were being sent electronically, perhaps, to the administrator. And what happened here is the provider, Muir Medical, whatever they're called, has this policy of not sending records directly to administrators. The beneficiary or plan participant has to pick them up. Just wondering, would the administrator ever just reach out directly to the medical provider? I mean, it gets pretty confusing for, you know, participants, and these big medical providers have lots of patients. It seems like this is a situation that maybe could have been resolved if the participant and Muir had just communicated and somehow arranged to get the records. I'm not saying that the plan requires the administrator to do that, but is there any indication that the administrator did that, reached out at all to Muir?
So even though previously the administrator, Mr. Strickland, claims under long-term disability, reached out to get medical records, here Mr. Strickland was repeatedly told he needed to get them. So even if he had a misunderstanding at the beginning, I don't think by the time that at least the claim was denied, there was that misunderstanding. With regard to John Muir, the plan did not reach out to John Muir and request the records. What the plan, the appeal specialist did, was reached out to Mr. Strickland. And the first call to Mr. Strickland was they were unable to reach him because his voicemail was full, even though they had told him in an earlier conversation. And in the conversation in which they discussed the John Muir letter and that they didn't have the records and that he needed to get the records, that he needed to stay in contact. The plan administrator followed up again with Mr. Strickland and said, please return our call within 2 days. Ask on that call, on that message, because she was not able to reach him directly, whether he needed additional time to toll the period for the decision to be made, and they never heard from Mr. Strickland.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I know he was not responsive in many cases. There were phone calls made and letters and things of that sort. The records did get submitted eventually in January of the following year, I think, when his attorney submitted them.
But correct.
I guess that's just too little too late under the terms of the plan, which goes to Judge Merguia's earlier question, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. There's no conflict of interest here. Even so, there would be abuse of discretion standard. I mean, Mr. Strickland, I think the record shows that Mr. Strickland, after the appeal was denied, indicated to the plan administrator that John Muir wouldn't release the records because he hadn't paid his bill. Now, certainly if he'd raised that concern, he probably would have gotten more time, et cetera. But again, the question comes back to whether the plan acted, if there was a reasonable basis. And it's not unreasonable under the plan for there to be an interpretation to require, consistent with the plan, medical records, and to follow the process and make the decision that Mr. Strickland simply had not shown that he remained totally disabled.
Thank you.
I think my time is just about up. If there are any more questions.
Yeah.
I don't have any.
I think your time is formally up because that clock's ticking upward. Unfortunately for you, the non-show from Mr. Badway doesn't cede his time to you.
Thank you all very much.
So unless Judge Merguia or Judge Chief Judge Cole, they have questions, I think we should conclude.
No. Thank you. No, I have no more questions.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Let me just state for the record, the case of Strickland versus AT&T Pension Benefit Plan shall now be submitted. I anticipate that the panel in some way will communicate with counsel for Mr. Strickland, and if he asks us to reopen this and consider anything further, you know, we'll do so formally. Having heard nothing further, Strickland versus AT&T Pension Benefit Plan number 1815336 shall now be submitted. And the panel, having no other cases to be argued, will adjourn for the day.
Thank you.